Welcome and good night, everyone. This is Byron Belitzos. I'm your host tonight. I'm the CEO of Origin Press. And if you're all just signing on, we're about to begin the Precious Metals 101. This is the first in the Precious Metals miniseries from Solari. And tonight, as always, our guest is Catherine Austin Fitz, the president of Solari, Inc. Well, if you're a newcomer to the complex world of precious metals, we have something important for you tonight. It's been said that love is the currency of the universe. But for the moment, here on Earth, we have another kind of currency, and that's money. And there's really kind of two forms of currency that we deal with here on Earth. One is money as fiat currency, and the other is what Catherine calls real money, which is money in some form related to precious metals or actually precious metals themselves. We're going to learn about this distinction and a whole lot more tonight in Precious Metals 101. Next week, we're going to move on to a more advanced topic, which is investing in silver and gold coins with an important expert and special guest, Franklin Sanders. That's next week, March 31st at 6 p.m. PST, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as always. And then the next week, on April 7th, it'll be Precious Metals Investing in Digital Gold with an interview with James Turk, which should be a very important and very exciting cap to our three-part series. And as always, tonight we'd like you to email your questions to info@solari.com. That's info@solari.com, and we will pick those up about 1 hour into the show. And also, please, again, always send your feedback. We really love to hear from you. Again, send that feedback during the show, after the show, anytime to info@solari.com. And I want to remind everybody who's listening tonight that you can download this show within 1 day after tonight, and we will post that at the homepage for the show, which all of you have already been to, the home page for the event that we're doing tonight, Precious Metals 101. Catherine Austin Fitz has written the following lovely passage. It goes like this: "It's time for Main Street folks to discover gold and silver as a medium for transactions and savings. It's time for our mothers, our nieces, our kids, our webmasters, students, cab drivers, truck drivers, millions of Americans who have never known the joys of investing in gold and silver to start getting into this market. It's time to vote with our money for our freedom." Well, with that, I'd like to introduce Catherine Austin Fitz. How are you tonight, Catherine?
Hey, Byron. How are you, and how is everybody on the call? We have a great turnout tonight. I'm very excited.
Thanks again, everyone, for if you're just signing in. This is the Precious Metals 101, and Catherine Fitz and Byron Belitzos, and we're ready to launch into some important topics. I'm terribly excited to learn about this, and thanks to Catherine mentoring all of us, we're going to be a lot wiser about how we deal with this currency called money. Well, Catherine, I think we're going to start, aren't we, with some context and looking at the background on sort of the history of money and the role of currency in the broad sense, and also how it relates to the Solari model. So I wonder if you want to just launch right into that.
Right. And let me start, Byron, by talking about how I came to understand how important precious metals was, because I didn't always. In fact, in 2000, when I was studying the corruption in the markets, someone told me about a website called La Metropole Café. And I went to La Metropole Café, and the proprietor of La Metropole Café is a wonderful fellow named Bill Murphy. Used to be a football player and was a very successful commodities trader on Wall Street. And Bill had started something called the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, which I'm now a board member of. And he was leading a group of people through the Internet who were very upset about the manipulation in the gold markets. And so I started to publish through his website because it was one of the premier websites on the real deal on financial markets. So it was really a network globally of financial people like myself from all over the world, but they were very much organized around precious metals. And, I've been on Wall Street for 11 years, and I've been an investment banker for almost 20 years, but I really didn't know a lot about precious metals. And so I started to listen to all these guys, and I kept saying, you know, why is this so important? Why is this so important? And what I discovered was that the price of gold and the price of silver, the price of precious metals, had been manipulated by a lot of the same groups of institutions who were stealing them, or I thought were stealing the money out of the federal government. And in fact, it was that manipulation of precious metals that had turned off what I considered the smoke alarm. And so I started to get into understanding precious metals and understanding the role of currency and money in sort of, you know, how we create a sustainable world. And so I've come to see precious metals as a very important part of transformation. And that's why I'm so glad we're having these teleseminars and these conversations. So let me step back and introduce a little bit about what is money, what is a currency.
Yes, please do.
And talk a little bit about the history. And that, you know, my favorite way to do this is an example I've used with you before, which is the pigs and cows. You have pigs and I have cows, and we want to transact. But your pig is, you know, worth $300 each, and my cow is worth $1,000 each, and we don't have an easy way to sort of liquefy our trading between our cows and our pigs. So we create money. We take something, and historically the most common form of money was coins, precious metal coins. But we create a medium of exchange that can also be a unit of value. And we say, well, you know, I have this many ounces of gold, and so your cows translate into this many ounces of gold, and your pigs translate into this many ounces of gold. And so we use our gold coins, our shekels, if you will, to transact and to make our transactions more liquid. Okay, because if we just have to do everything in barter, it's nowhere near as efficient, and it doesn't use our time. And so over many, many centuries, people developed these money systems, often with coins. And then finally somebody, and it was the Bank of England in 1690, said, you know, it's much too bulky to carry around all these precious metals. Why don't we just put the precious metals in the vault and we'll issue paper currency that are really certificates that reflect those gold currency?
Sounds like a fatal turning point.
Well, one thing we're going to talk about tonight is, you know, when you create such a system, can you really trust that the gold that your certificate is supposed to represent is really in the vault? Because what is, you know, sort of the history of monetary and currency reform in the last, you know, couple hundred years since the Bank of England did that, was the pressure on governments and banks to dilute the value of the currency by, instead of, you know, let's say I have 100 paper certificates outstanding against 100 ounces of gold, to say, well, you know, we don't need all the gold in the vault because no one will bring all their certificates in and want the gold at the same time. So we'll only have 10 ounces of gold instead of 100 ounces of gold. And that's how you get into what's called fiat currency, when you don't have full backing. And, of course, the problem is that creates a situation where you can have extraordinary manipulation of the currency system.
Can we back up a little bit, Catherine?
Sure.
Before the Bank of England did this, I think it was the 17th century, say in Roman times, there were denarii, I think they called them, and their money was all in gold and silver, right?
Right.
And if you
read the U.S. Constitution, it contemplates that the Treasury will issue, currency in silver and gold coins.
So everyone was issuing currency. So there would be, even in Roman times, there would be, the government would be minting the coins and telling you what they were worth, or how did they...
Right, but it's not always the government. We've had periods in our history, Byron, when different banks have issued their own currencies. And so we had a period, Andrew Jackson finally got rid of Mr. Biddle in the central bank, and we went to a system where lots of different banks issued their own currencies. And certainly we've had communities issue currencies. At the end of the Great Depression, there were over 3,000 community currencies. But traditionally, over the last couple hundred years, a sovereign nation has a currency, and that is the form of legal tender acceptable for debts in that sovereign nation. Usually that currency is managed by a central bank, and one of the chief, there's sort of two chief problems with accountability in our economy. One is if the private bank is privately owned and controlled, then you don't have your democratically voted representatives really controlling the most powerful part of the economy, which is your currency. So part of the accountability issue has been the fact, for example, that we vote for our congresspeople, and they, you know, they basically appropriate for the U.S. Treasury, but the Treasury doesn't control our currency. That's controlled by the Federal Reserve Banks, and they are privately owned, managed, and they don't provide anywhere near full disclosure of their operations. So that's one point of non-accountability. The second point is back to this idea of is the gold in Fort Knox, and is it really backing up the currency? Is there anything behind, and the issue of once you get a private bank who has fiat currency, who can manipulate that currency, then you see a tremendous economic drain on the population using that currency traditionally.
There was a point, though, that even the Fed had to have gold backing up the currency.
Right. We've used several times, the United States has used a gold standard or something like a gold standard, and we finally gave up the ghost in 1971. Nixon told us we were on the gold standard, then off, then back on, and then Nixon finally pulled us off in 68 and 71. And since then, we've seen the value of the dollar from the time we broke from the gold standard depreciate against gold by about 90%.
That's hurt us. Why did they do something that would hurt ordinary people?
Well, there are two arguments, because during that period, Byron, we have basically, the United States and North America has pumped out debt and currency around the world. One of our primary exports has been currency. We print money, take it to Russia, and they use it for transactions. It doesn't come back. And so there are many who would argue that the U.S. and U.S. consumers have gotten an incredible run of spending more than they're earning.
So, in effect, it has helped us in a funny way, kind of in a short term.
Well, I would argue, and I think James Turk and Franklin Sanders and the other people who are so supportive and interest of seeing a healthy precious metals market, that it has not helped us. What it has done is it has advantaged the people who were the insiders in managing the currency. And it has promoted the centralization of economic and political power. You know, I always describe the pro-centralization team as the tapeworm. So it has dramatically improved life for the tapeworm. It has certainly made life more convenient and pleasant for the American consumers in some way, but I would argue that it has been very significant in debasing the sort of value and importance of the productive people in our economy. So we've seen a real debasing of the culture and a real debasing of the economic and political power of what I call the community wizard. So if the tapeworm is the pro-centralization team, the people who really run small business, small farms, make municipalities go, you know, the people who we can really look to be reliable and lead on the ground, have been significantly and severely disadvantaged by this kind of system. And so, yes, their children have gotten Sony Walkmans and video games for cheaper, but I think their economic security and their political security has been very, very much deteriorated as a result of this kind of non-accountable financial system.
Well, that's, again, because of the fiat nature of the currency.
It's a combination of the fiat nature of the currency and the ability of the inside players to protect themselves from the debasement while draining everyone else. So, for example, when we talked about navigating the housing budget, we talked about the existence of a credit machinery through the U.S. Treasury and the New York Fed that can combine government securities with black budget organized crime with federal credit in a way that provides a fantastically low cost of capital to the big corporations, and you know who then can outperform this debasement, whereas the rest of us are paying for it. So it's a very subtle financial mechanism. I've spent my whole life trying to learn and understand it, and I've written many articles trying to explain it. And it's not easy to see or understand. And that's part of what's so insidious about this part of economic warfare, because they're very, very, it's really one in a million people who can see and understand the role of fiat currency and the federal credit in manipulating the economy. And I think, to me, one of the most, because clearly I'm absolutely committed to seeing the decentralization of economic and political power, and I see one of the most important constituencies who can help lead that are the people who've grown up through La Metropole Cafe and Gata, you know, the financial leaders who've been so upset by the monetary failures. And one of the things that has kind of breaks my heart for the last 5 years is I have also come to know a fantastic network of people who are very politically active and very concerned about the centralization of economic and political power. And they are completely divorced, both in personal relationships and in language and terminology, from the financial leadership who are also fighting for decentralization of political power. So one of the things I'm hoping to do in these teleseminars is to introduce, you know, to a much wider network who some of the leaders in the financial world are who've been writing and very concerned with monetary reform and trying to find ways that all of us in our day-to-day life can participate in changing the currency and understanding the currency and understanding these issues, you know, and creating businesses and mechanisms for us to do that. And so that's a bridge that I perceive if these different networks could start to meet and understand the high-performance people throughout, we could see tremendous synergy of the sort of leadership we need on the decentralization team to really shift things in a profound way.
You know, we're talking about precious metals in relation to all of that, and you mentioned gold as a sort of a smoke alarm, and that's been obscured, and I think that's crucial and right at the central, the heart of what you're talking about, isn't it?
Right, and I never understood how powerful gold was as a smoke alarm until I started to, you know, I started in 1998 to travel around the country and live around the country and live in Hickory Valley, Tennessee, trying to understand on the ground in communities what was happening in the economy. And one of the things I discovered, whether I was in the north, the south, the east, the west, with people who were old, who were young, was that everyone believed that if there was a problem with government corruption or if the economy was really going in a bad way, they would know about it because the price of gold would go up. And what I learned was there was almost a universal faith in the price of gold as a signal that if somebody, if busy people needed to pay attention, if the government was getting too out of control or the banking system was starting to fail, they would know that something was wrong because the price of gold would go up. As I went around speaking and trying to persuade my friends, my family, my neighbors that there was something wrong, I can't tell you how many times I heard people tell me, oh, well, you know, everything's fine because look how low the price of gold is. Now, in fact, in the last couple of years, the price of gold, despite all the effort to suppress it, has been sneaking up.
What has it gone from, just give us an example, where is it at now and where was it back, say, in
90? Oh, you know, I just realized I didn't check the price today, so I'll go to Kitco. On the event resources page, we put up, Byron, some of the really excellent websites now to track this market, and the one I use the most to track the price day-to-day is Kitco.com, which is the most popular gold and precious metals website. We have a couple charts up on the event resource page from Kitco showing the historical price of gold. Anyway, we closed at about 425 today. We're down a touch. No, we're up a touch today. We're down about $10 in the last month, but we're up slightly today.
I think it's doubled or so in the last, what, 6-7 years?
I'll show you the thing we have on the event resource page. It's from late 1998 to 2004, an ounce of gold rose 52% to 438, while the S&P 500 declined 1.5%. Now, when I say those numbers, I don't think of the value of gold having gone up in that period, Byron. I think of the value of the dollar having fallen.
So it's a function of that.
Uh-huh. So one One writer said the other day that the price of a man's business suit in Rome, a toga, but a nice toga in Rome and a good business suit today, if you looked at it in terms of price in gold, it had remained unchanged.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's very important when somebody says the price of gold is up. I don't really think the value of gold is up. I think the value of gold is pretty much unchanged.
That's what's good about gold. There's something about it that's consistent and stable.
Right. And it's the other thing about gold that I find, gold and silver, is we literally, a community in America could be trading with a community in Asia or Africa or any part of the planet, and gold and silver are ubiquitous. They have, you know, they have a commonly understood value universally. And that's why, you know, even in a world where governments and central banks stop being reliable, and I would say that we're pretty much in that world, the question is, what is reliable and what is reliably, what has meaning globally? And precious metals is the, you know, is a standard that has held for thousands and thousands of years.
Also, the supply of these metals is steadily increasing. You can't sort of by fiat increase the supply of gold or silver like you can with money.
Well, but you know, there are many who are trying, and there are many investment vehicles that are coming out in the market where, in fact, they are trying to create fiat gold. So you have different investment programs by banks and other dealers who sell you gold or certificates representing an interest in gold, but the gold's really not in the vault. And so one of the things we have to be very concerned about is if we're going to participate in a fiat gold or silver system, we better understand it's not real. It's a fiat system. And one of the things that Franklin and James and I'm going to talk about again and again is know the difference between whether you're buying real gold and silver or you're buying into a fiat system.
Get into these different vehicles that that it comes in, you know, both for transaction and for savings. Do you want to give us kind of a rundown on that?
Yeah. There are many different ways that you can save with precious metals. I like to introduce the different lists by saying to people that I really think of precious metals as a form of money and as a form of insurance for the worst case. It's not, it's almost a, it's not quite precise to say if this is an investment in the sense that you know, I buy a piece of real estate and charge a rent and it produces a yield. When you buy an ounce of gold, it's not something that generates a return the way a business or a piece of real estate might. So it's really more a form of money and putting your value in a store of money that's going to hold, or insurance for the worst case, because if we really do have very, very bad economic times, this is something that you can use to basically exchange for other goods and services and that will hold its value no matter what central bank or government crashes and burns. One way, and the first way that people hold gold and silver, Byron, is as jewelry or ornaments. if you go to Asia, you have these big Muslim populations in India, for example, and they will accumulate and hold significant amounts of their savings in gold, but they will have it in jewelry and literally wear it. You know, the safest place to put it is not in the safe deposit box, but around your neck. So you'll see these families with tremendous amounts of jewelry. But jewelry is, and ornaments are one way that you can hold this in savings. The one that's most popular for most people is bullion, and bullion can be either bars, you know, you'll see pictures of the big bars of gold and silver stacked up, or coins. Now, bullion coins are coins where the value of the coin is based on how many ounces are in the coin. When you start to invest in precious metals, you'll hear the term numismatics, and those are coins where the value of the coin comes from its age or scarcity, you know, something that was minted in 1930 and it's now become very valuable. So its value is deemed to be greater than the meltdown value of the ounces. Franklin Sanders is a dealer who we're going to hear from next week who promotes bullion purchases. You'll find other dealers who promote numismatics. And then, of course, they're much more much older coins than numismatics. There's some antique and antiquities. So coins and bars is another way to invest in precious metals. The next kind is there's grown up a whole series of different capital markets investments in Central Fund of Canada is one where you buy a stock, and that stock is a participation in a pool of bullion, which is in the vault. There the issue is you want to make sure that the bullion is very much in the vault. There's been a big debate recently in the precious metal market because we've had exchange-traded funds where there's real questions by the experts, you know, saying we think this could be a fiat gold system. There's, you know, the bullion is really not in the vault. But you can there are ways then to essentially invest in a stock that is a participation in a pool of bullion, and that's important for some people because they like to do this through their 401k or IRA, so they need something that's traded on the exchange. Another way to do it, Byron, is through the certificate programs that banks have. So you buy a certificate, and that is, you know, and then the gold and silver is held by your bank. One thing that is very important if you're really going to buy precious metals as an insurance is whether or not you take physical possession. Because the one way to make sure that you're really buying an ounce of gold, you know, when you buy an ounce of gold, is to take physical possession and put that coin or that bar in your safe deposit box or in your safe. So that's always a very important issue as to are you going to take physical possession and where are you going to put it. Finally, there are some people like to invest in precious metals not by investing in the bullion or the coins themselves, but in investing in precious mining companies and companies that you know, find gold and produce gold. So that's finally the last way that investors like to invest. So there are many different ways to approach investing in precious metals now. One of the newest ways is something called digital gold, which James Turk is going to talk about. He is the founder of a company called goldmoney.com, and you can go on the Internet and switch money from your bank account into digital gold. It's a system. James got, you know, the same idea originally from the Bank of England, where let's say you and I were to buy an ounce of gold through Gold Money. Gold Money would go out and buy an ounce of gold. You would own that ounce of gold, but then you would have the ability to trade it digitally. You would have a digital representation of your gold that was sitting in the vault. And so this is something that is, one, offshore, your gold's sitting in England. Two, you can use it for transactions. Solari has hired several people to do projects at various times and paid them with digital gold. So I can jump onto digital gold and transfer money in a split second.
It's not fiat gold, it's real gold.
It's real gold. So
one for one.
So you and I could decide to hire me to do something and pay me an ounce of digital gold. We could literally agree and you could transfer the gold, you know, in seconds.
What do you think of this form of transaction? Sounds pretty revolutionary.
It is very revolutionary. Now, what it means is you've got rather than your money sitting in checking account in dollars, it's sitting in bullion in the vault over in England. And it's funny, as I travel around the country, people say, well, I don't know how to open an offshore account. And I always say, I do. Just go to www.goldmoney.com.
So if I convert my money into digital gold, well, what's the upshot of that? Is that something that's reliable, or is it, I guess, you know, the exchange value of gold goes up and down, so.
Right. Gold and silver are very volatile right now and very manipulated.
Yes.
Now, I say they're extremely manipulated, and something we're going to get into a little bit later, but right now all the financial markets are highly manipulated, in my opinion, Byron, so. But certainly gold and silver are much more volatile. And so I really encourage people when considering whether or not they want to save or hold any of their wealth in precious metals, that that they should only put money in precious metals to the extent that it's a long-term hold, or they're really holding to protect for insurance in the worst case. So this is, you know, this is something you buy a couple of coins and you put them away for a rainy day. You accumulate them and you measure your wealth in ounces of gold and silver, and you don't worry about the dollar price. If I have expenses next month in which are denominated in dollars, so say my rent and utilities are denominated in dollars, you don't want to put the money that you're going to use to pay those in another currency or in precious metals, because obviously the prices could go up and down, and you could, you know, it could work to your advantage or not. But you certainly don't want to take any of those risks. So because it's such a volatile pricing mechanism in dollars, I encourage people, if they're going to save in these assets, to save, you know, to simply just start to accumulate them as assets, put them away for a rainy day, and do not fret, do not worry about the price as it goes up and down. If you're a person who frets as the price goes up and down, then this is not an asset class for you.
Like, some people may be thinking, Catherine, that, well, you know, we've talked about navigating the falling dollar. The dollar's going to go down even more, and it's volatile and it's unstable. And so people, you know, who are just coming into this think, well, gee, maybe I should have gold coins.
Right.
So what do you say to them?
I agree. I mean, I think the dollar is a currency whose value comes primarily from the force that backs it up. So people hold assets, whether it's treasury bills or currency, worldwide for many reasons related to covert operations, warfare, force. If the dollar had to perform simply based on economic productivity, I think it would drop about 90% in value.
What I mean is, there are people that would say, well, I should just put everything over into gold. I know just a moment ago you said that that's dangerous, but also the dollar's dangerous too, isn't it?
Right. Right.
The
problem we have is we're operating in a system where we're operating in a financial system which is highly manipulated, and the people who control and manage it have the ability to always advantage themselves as insiders against us. And so the question is, how do we manage our affairs to protect ourselves both politically and economically? Now, they can manipulate the price of gold up and down, but at some point these things have value independent of what the tapeworm would like to manipulate.
At the day of reckoning, you mean, or at any given moment?
Both. But in the short run, what we don't want to do is to be dependent on the tapeworm.
Yes.
So if you put a lot of your assets in precious metals, but you need suddenly for them to be liquid, in the short term, you run the risk that, you know, gold has been pushed down that day.
Because the tapeworm, so to speak, is
right.
Deprived.
One of the reasons I focus so much effort on encouraging people to get our overhead down and to get out of debt is the way to not run those risks is to have as little overhead as possible. Another reason that, you know, I hope as communities start to organize for more local self-sufficiency, we can start to talk about community currencies, because there are many ways that we can exchange transaction systems within communities, not just with precious metals, but with other assets, particularly our time. So the more liquid we can become with each other without the tapeworm's financial mechanisms, the better off we all are.
All right, let's continue, Catherine. I think we were going to now talk about, if I'm not mistaken, about resources that people can find at our own on our own webpage.
Yeah, I spent, when I started to learn about precious metals in 2000, Byron, I went through an extraordinary journey of finding out who was writing about this, who was providing dealer services, who are the best websites. And what we've done is we've gathered at the event resources page a real distillation of some of the best sources in the marketplace for precious metals. A great introduction is provided by the Wikipedia Online Encyclopedia. And we've provided those links. My favorite book, by far and away, is the new one that James Turk, who is going to be our guest 2 weeks from now, has just finished writing, called The Coming Collapse of the Dollar and How to Profit, Make a Fortune by Investing in Gold and Other Hard Assets. And it's a wonderful overview, and I really encourage everyone to either get it or go to their library and access it, because it's just a wonderful overview of this whole market.
I can recommend it, too. I just finished reading it today, and as a book publisher, I can just tell folks, this is a well-done book. It's short and will teach you what you need to know about precious metals.
Yeah, it's really a wonderful overview. There's several outstanding websites on these markets that we've listed. One is Kitco. Another is the La Metropole Cafe, which is run by Bill Murphy, who's the chairman of GATA. And then Jim Poplova has an internet radio show, Financial Sense NewsHour, that covers many markets, including the precious metal market. And it's a wonderful, you know, I love, as I'm doing something like cleaning the house, you know, I'll just click onto Jim Poplova and start listening to various shows. And, you know, I'm a multitasker, so I love that medium. There's several newsletters that I recommend. One is James Turk, one is Franklin Sanders, and then the other is David Morgan, Silver Investor, for the silver market, and we've listed those. The GATA website is a very rich source about manipulation in the gold market, and it has been a wonderful source for me because it's been, you know, for someone who is in Washington fighting about the missing money and trying to illuminate the financial corruption, there's no way, Byron, that they could have stolen that money or the $4 trillion missing money or bubbled the housing market without also suppressing the gold price. And, you know, one of the critical issues for me during all those years is how can these guys get away with it? And it's really been the GATA effort that has illuminated and created the documentation to prove sort of how a lot of the financial manipulations work.
How on God's green earth can these people manipulate the gold price? That was something that's stated. I mean, okay, you know, so this is really black operations. I mean,
yes,
how
yes.
does that work? Do we need to know how that works?
Yeah, when Chris Sanders and I wrote The Negative Return on Investment Economy, A Discourse on America's Black Budget,
yes.
What we tried to describe is that the manipulation really is so critical to understand the history of the creation of the National Security Act and the CIA Act of 47 and 49, and the creation of a financial mechanism where, through the Exchange Stabilization Fund, the U.S. Treasury and the New York Fed, and it's really the big banks who run the federal accounts, can manipulate stock, bond, currency markets by law with no accountability, engaging in significant insider trading, and make money that way and backdoor huge profits to financial players that way. And we've described it extensively, but when you understand that mechanism, it is a completely non-accountable mechanism to use our money and credit literally to control and manipulate markets. It can only happen, Byron, when we don't have good financial disclosure by place. So, you and all the listeners on this call do not get annual financial statements of both the government budgets as required by law, you know, for the different agencies, but in addition, contiguous to the areas that you vote for political representation. So there's a relationship between their ability to create this mechanism and to manipulate the markets and to not have that data, and that's one of the reasons I suspect that our company in the 90s was targeted and they destroyed our software tool, Community Wizard, because one way to prevent these kinds of manipulations, there's no way we could have bubbled the housing market or manipulated the gold market if Community Wizard had spread virally through communities when we were making it. So the illumination is a very important part of this play. I know one point I really want to make tonight, it's very important to me that all of our listeners hear this and think about this, because the Solari vision really is that there is, you know, we live in a world of economic warfare, And there's the team of people who are centralizing political and economic power, and then there's the team of people who are decentralizing or trying to decentralize political and economic power. And part of what needs to happen is the pro-decentralization team, or what I call the community wizards, we need to find each other, meet each other, and develop a plan. And let's say all the community wizards on the planet, a lot of which are on this phone call tonight, were to come into a big room and say, well, we need a plan. You know, what should be in our plan? One of the things I would say to them is the two most important strategic resources that we need to make sure that our team controls as opposed to the other team controls, one of them is food. So it's food, seed, water, farmland, you know, so it's what we eat, what sustains us, what gives us physical energy, and then precious metals, gold and silver, because those are two of the most important strategic control points in the economy.
How can we get control of gold and silver if it's today manipulated, or is this so?
Well, you know, if everyone who loves freedom, Byron, tomorrow started to just every month take a little bit of savings. If you can only save $10, get together with a Solari investor circle and, you know, $100 together, start buying gold and silver coins.
So there's nothing stopping us from buying it. It's just that the exchange value may be manipulated, but obviously we want to get some gold in our corner.
Right. And if we can start to slowly accumulate enough, then those are pools of assets that we can use to back the community wizards in making sure we control the farmland, the seed, the food, and the other critical municipal assets in the economy.
So then you're envisioning transactions that we'll be doing with using gold or currency.
One of the model transactions that we are, one of the first model transactions we're going to roll out for the Solari Investor Circles are monthly acquisition plans. And, you know, I hear so many people in America say, well, I'm not an investor. And I say, well, we need to change that intention. You need to have an intention that you're an investor, because once you learn how to think like an investor, you know, I spent 11 years on Wall Street, and everybody, you know, bought and sold companies, and they never had any money, but they thought of themselves as investors. So we want to create that intention. And so let's say that I have no money. I may be able to take $1 or $10, you know, a month with a group of 12 other people, and together, that's $100 is all it takes to sign up for Franklin Sanders' monthly acquisition savings plan.
So, getting back to your main point about this is that communities can protect themselves, or groups of people or individuals can use gold to protect themselves in the meantime, until we see what happens with the global economy. Is that?
Absolutely. What we've been watching since 2000, as the tapeworm really makes significant efforts to suppress the gold prices, we've seen them go to extraordinary lengths, Byron, to shut off physical cash purchases, whether it's the physical purchases of people buying coins or the physical purchases that result from buying vehicles of integrity like, you know, gold money or Central Fund of Canada. So we've seen them pushing fiat gold. We've seen them taking political moves to dampen, you know, to get governments to try and suppress gold, physical gold purchases. So it's clear to me from watching that this is a very important strategic power point in the economy, because the tapeworm is literally trying to buy up all the gold. We've seen, as the price has been suppressed, what's been happening is they are transferring gold out of the central banks and out of governments through a leasing and derivatives mechanism. And so the inventory of gold in central banks and government is going down, 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 and it's going out to private parties at below market prices. And so, as I've written and talked about the piratization of assets out of HUD and other government agencies, if you said to me, what has been the most egregious and worst piratization that's happened in the last 10 years? It's been the transferring of our gold inventories out of government and central banks at below market prices. This is how the prioritization of gold inventories has occurred. And I wanted to tell you one of my favorite stories. I was driving from Tennessee up to Philadelphia about 3 years ago, and I was in a truck stop. I had stopped for gas, and I was in a truck stop, and the trucker in front of me, there's about 20 truckers in a line with me about number three, and the trucker who was paying for about 20 different trucks, so it was a very long transaction. And so I reached for one of the tabloids. One of the things I've discovered is occasionally you'll see some of the best articles in the National Enquirer Star tabloids about what's going on financially in the government.
Okay.
So I looked down, and I think it was the National Enquirer said, all the gold is gone in Fort Knox. So I reached down for the tabloid, and the trucker behind me said, oh, lady, don't buy that. Those are so expensive. Don't do that. Don't waste your money on that. And I just flipped it open to the, you know, a story that said all the gold is gone in Fort Knox. And he stopped and he said, oh, well. He said, that's true. He says, yep, the big boys then got together and stole all the gold. and so then all the truckers down the line started talking about how they, you know, yep, the big boys then piratized all the gold. And, you know, I said to them, how come you guys know everything and the folks in Washington don't know that all this gold is being stolen out from under them? And they said, you know, because we have to drive everything around. So we see the real deal because we got to drive it back and forth. Anyway, it's kind of funny. But what has happened is we've seen significant movement of our gold assets out of the central banks and out of government. And I think one of the most important unanswered questions of economic warfare today is who's getting that gold cheap, who's stockpiling it, and for what purpose? And that's what frightens me, because I think it's the private assets under Tapeworm control are going up, and the precious metal assets under Community Wizard control are going down.
So there's kind of a double egregious whammy here, because with fiat currency, they're manipulating that all over the place. And gold and precious metals, which are really supposed to be the smoke alarm about what's really happening to the economy and to the currency, is also being manipulated.
Right. And the politics around this have gotten worse. We saw several weeks ago the IMF announced or was proposing that it sell its gold inventories off. And its reason was it was going to take the money and help the poor. This is one of the most outrageous proposals that I've ever read. Because what they're really saying, Byron, is we're going to use fiat currency to drain and steal from the poor.
No.
Then we're going to take the gold assets of the IMF and transfer them to private parties at below market prices so that these private guys get a huge windfall. And we're going to justify that politically by dribbling the money back on the pretext that we're going to help the people that we stole it from, but in a way that centralizes control of their communities. And so you have something that is horrible for the poor in about three ways, being used to you know, it's really theft that's being justified on the pretext that they're going to help the poor.
What other cases do you see of that sort of thing at other, say, World Bank or in Europe or in other parts of the world?
Well, one of the things you see is you often see progressive politics used to justify various tapeworm actions. One of the ones that most concerns me is oftentimes I'll have people tell me, you know, it's wrong to promote precious metals. We ought to vote with our money against holding precious metals because the mining companies are so bad. And the mining companies, there are mining companies who are just absolutely terrible, Byron. That's absolutely true. But I feel a little bit about that the way I would feel if I said, well, you know, the food companies are evil, so, Byron, you should stop eating food. Or you should let Monsanto control the seed supply or GM control the seed supply because they're evil. So... So you will see ethical investment or socially responsible investment used to promote that we concede control of these assets and these markets to the wrong sort of people. And I think, you know, one of the things I would propose is it's very important as precious metals become more and more valuable and important in a world where the sort of central banking sovereign nation state model seems to be disintegrating, that people who are interested in these issues get into owning the right stock and ensuring that we use our capital and our investment to make sure that the mining companies that are running things properly and clean have a lower cost of capital and the ones that don't have a higher cost of capital. So as consumers and investors, we and activists, we have the ability to make it very painful for the companies that don't behave properly and wonderful for the companies that do. And that's important because whether it's food, whether it's precious metals, we're going to need, you know, capacity in these areas, and it behooves us if that capacity is compatible with ethical investment values.
Got about, we're at the 10-minute mark, 10 minutes before the Q&A, and I want to ask folks to, if you have questions now, it's the time to shoot them to info@solari.com. Catherine, there's a couple of big issues we've got to do in a couple, in 10 minutes here. One, I think you and I wanted to talk about was what's happening in the future, the sort of the slow burn scenario we've talked about before versus the Armageddon scenario in regard to precious metals. And also we want to kind of finish up here, I think, don't we, on Solari investor circles and
right.
How they can work with precious metals.
Right. In an Armageddon scenario, having precious metals, Byron, is the most valuable because obviously they are a form of real money and a store of value, which is going to be good if the economy should deteriorate a lot or things be chaotic. That's when having physical possession of precious metal coins is worth a lot. If you talk to anybody who's lived through significant inflation in Germany or Europe during the war, in Latin America, Russia recently, we saw economic environments where having precious metals was really a difference between life and death. In a slow burn, it's a different picture. Now we know that because of the suppression of precious metals, that there's a lot of pressure for the value of precious metals as priced in dollars to go up over time. At the same time, I'm a little bit more cautious there than some of the other people, like a James Turk, because I think I really believe the tapeworm has the ability to suppress prices and to take a lot of extra sort of ugly steps to try and encourage people to sell their silver and gold into the tapeworm. So that's why I'm very concerned that if a slow burn scenario should happen, we could see periods when the price of gold and silver drop significantly from where they are now. That's why it's very important to me, if anybody is thinking of holding assets in gold and silver, that they think of it as a very long-term thing and not worry if the price should bounce up and down a lot, because I think the tapeworm will go to extraordinary lengths to accumulate these and to discourage people from holding them. So a slow burn scenario is one where over the long run, there's reason to believe that the trend and direction of the price in dollars is up. But I feel pretty conservative about it. And so I would really encourage anybody, if they're thinking of investing and acting in this market in any way, to be prepared to live through some deep dips in price in a slow burn scenario.
Catherine, what I think you're saying is, you know, to the sort of the so-called gold bugs is, folks, you have to understand there's some politics here that you may not see that's going to affect the future value of your gold investment. And that's why you advise people to be somewhat more conservative than the average.
Right. The gold bugs and I tend to part company because they think the market's going to clear through price. And I don't. I think the market's going to clear through World Trade Center explosions. And let me give you an example. On September 9th of 2001, From the Wilderness put out an alert saying that the global financial system was in a meltdown. And what we saw, Byron, at that time was there was tremendous belief by the gold bugs that the price was about to skyrocket. But, of course, that didn't happen. Instead, what happened is we blew up, you know, the World Trade Center was blown up. We had 9/11. And the Federal Reserve banks and the Treasury and the, you know, sort of New York Fed banks exerted phenomenal control of the economy and engaged in a form of monetary sort of pumping up the economy in extraordinary ways, all justified by 9/11. And so what I say is if we can manipulate the markets through covert intervention, both financial and physical, I mean literally blow up 3,000 people, you know, at that point, all bets are off that just because the global financial system is in meltdown doesn't mean that gold will go up.
There's your case in point, gold bugs, as long as you accept the idea that 9/11 is an inside job.
Well, I think the evidence is pretty compelling. I think the evidence is pretty compelling that whether it was an inside job or allowed to happen, it was used as an excuse for extraordinary financial manipulation. And we've seen that many times, Byron. There's so many times in the last 10 years when I was sure that finally the stock market, the financial markets were going to crash. And it's very simple. You know, we're behaving in highly unproductive ways. And so you think, okay, well, the chickens are going to come home to roost, and so the financial system's going to crash, and we'll have to clean up our act and grow up. And each time I was sure it was going to happen, we've seen these phenomenal interventions, you know, made possible by very sophisticated digital technology and black budget weaponry, and we don't need to go into all of those things. But, you know, so if we are free as a society, whenever the markets start to slow down to declare a war and go to another country and steal everything, it is theoretically possible to equate supply and demand with covert operations and warfare and extraordinary black budget interventions rather than through changes in price.
It's amazing that we're ending our first teleseminar on precious metals talking about the same thing we've been talking about before with the housing bubble,
uh-huh,
with everything else, which is the central feature of the economy, which is speculation that's going
on. Byron, one of the things I think it is absolutely essential, if we are going to transform our world, if we're going to build a beautiful world, the first thing we need is for the different leaders in the pro-decentralization team to find each other and to develop a common language, you know, about and a common map of what's going on and what do we want to do about it. And part of what's prevented that is that the financial people, sort of, and what I call the living equity people, the people who are interested in environment or social issues and social and economic justice, don't know each other and don't have a common language around these questions. And that's part of what I'm hoping to do with the teleseminar, is help us understand and connect the dots, because the pro-centralization team, the tapeworm, has this glorious map and is manipulating across these different markets and functions. And that's why I keep, you know, it's so important to understand that who is manipulating the housing bubble is the same group of banks and people who are manipulating the gold market, and the two are very much connected. And if we can start to understand the money around us and how it works and what we can do, and that's why the Solaria Investor Circles are so important to me, because it really comes down to I and my 11 friends are very busy. You know, I have a problem because my expenses are going up, my revenues are going down, and there's tremendous pressure on my time. You know, the issue for me is what can I do this week that will give me energy but also help transform my world? And so it's very important for me to bring down what we've learned about the housing bubble or the precious metal markets to something that a group of my family and friends can do, you know, now this week, that will really start to move us towards a world where we're using money as a power tool to invent the world in our image and not in the tapeworm's image.
Say just a bit more about Solaria Investor Circles in specifically with regard to precious metals, if you'd like, Catherine, then I think we should get into our Q&A.
Sure. There, in a salary economy, there are really four areas that define a healthy economy. And you can see our chart that describes this a little bit more at the Solari Action Network. We have a forum called Solari Investor Circles where we're developing the starter kits online. And the four areas, Byron, are one is equity financing, one is transparency of public money, and then privacy of individual money. One is sound money, which is this issue of currency. And so in each one of these different categories, what we have is different transactions that Circle can take to either increase the cost of capital to the good guys, the community wizards, to increase the cost of capital to the tapeworm or decrease the cost of capital to the wizards. So in each box, there'll be different model transactions which are suggested to you. And, of course, the important thing for the Circle is that everybody should do the model transactions that they find interesting and which, you know, are to their own self-interest and advantage in the short run. Within the sound currency area, two of the model transactions will be savings plans, like the savings plans we're going to hear from Franklin Sanders for coins and from James Turk on digital gold. So those are two of hundreds of model transactions eventually that Circles can do if they want to start to learn about currency and precious metals.
Thank you, Catherine. I'm going to now move us to the Q&A part of the show, and with this little apology, I have had unforeseen computer problems. I cannot bring the questions up on my screen, and Catherine will be bringing them up on hers. And why don't you go ahead and bring those up, Catherine, while I say just a few words.
Okay.
To invite
we have some great questions.
Okay.
One of my favorites is, what is the likelihood that the U.S. government will confiscate gold?
Oh, there you go.
As a lot of people who, you know, even beginners into precious metals know that Franklin Roosevelt in the Depression confiscated gold. And that helped stop the run on gold. It was one of the times we dropped off the gold standard. But gold was confiscated, and gold was confiscated truly at a below market price. Byron, at the time of that confiscation, gold and precious metals was a very significant portion of the sort of the community wizard's wealth of small investors and people all over the country. Today, precious metals is very, very small as a percentage. In fact, most of our wealth is in our homes and our 401ks and IRAs. And one of the things that Franklin will talk about, and you can read at the links that we provided to his website, is he is much more concerned, as am I, about the potential confiscation of the 401k and IRA through the way that those assets and their investment are regulated. We've seen more and more rules that really channel that money into big corporations in a very tapeworm kind of way, and that is a kind of confiscation. We've seen the manipulation of the stock market in a way that has really drained the pension funds. That is another form of confiscation. So, but what I always tell people is we are living in a time where all of our assets are at risk from confiscation by the government and the tapeworm. And that's one of the reasons it's so important to me that people start to organize into circles and organize within their communities and find their community wizards. Because I think there's a real concern about confiscation, and I am a person who has had my company has had my assets seized in a very sort of criminal and illegal way. So this is something I'm very sensitive to. But I would encourage anyone who wants to really go through the confiscation issue. That's one of the things we're going to go through with Franklin. But that is something that has happened historically. Clearly, it could happen again. But I think if we're concerned about confiscation of gold, I would be first and foremost concerned about confiscation of the value of our home and our 401ks. Clearly, the Social Security privatization is one of the most terrifying things I've ever heard of. So I think we should be concerned about confiscation across the board, and gold is just one piece of that.
You have more questions? I've got a
Yep, let me read another one that's great. We live on a beautiful organic farm in Vermont, creating community in our small village, and have some capital to invest. We are hoping to start a Solaria Circle, but it will take time. Should we just put it all into gold until we figure out how to do the Solaria Circle? There are going to be many model transactions in the Solaria Investor Circles, one of which is precious metals, but it's only one. I am a person who has, in the last 9 years, invested about $6 million in litigation building the Solaria model. But right now, I've pretty much sold all of my precious metals to invest in other people. So to help people get out of debt or to help people keep working on the Solaria model, I'm a great believer that people are the best investment. Now, that's me. I'm not encouraging someone else to do that. But there will be other model transactions. But I would really encourage someone. I'm not comfortable, Byron, with the idea of putting all my money into precious metals, rather than looking around me and saying, okay, who's paying 12 to 18% on debt in this community? Or where is the small business that is excellent that has potential? So the idea of putting everything into precious metals and ignoring the people around me in my community is not one. I tend to be more of a people investor. And I think that my only concern about, I'm a great believer in diversification. So the idea of putting all your assets into one thing is not something I'm comfortable with, because you never know what's going to come down the pike, and you never know what's going to work and what won't work. All of these systems have risks, and I think ultimately, I think the way that we can be secure and safe and wealthy is by having really strong communities. So it's hard for me to tell what's in the best interest of this person, but I tend to be one of those people who doesn't like to put everything in one basket. Excellent question. How do you know for a fact that the gold is in the vault with goldmoney.com? And I'm going to press Turk on this issue. When you are investing in any of these systems where you're taking a certificate or a representation, and then the bullion is in the vault, you're really depending on the quality of the people, both the auditors and the management in the system, and it is imperfect at best. I mean, just like when you put it in your safe deposit box, you're assuming that the bank won't open the vault and take it out, or a bomb won't drop on the bank. But you're depending on the reliability of the humans involved. And that's why, to me, I will only consider systems where I trust those people, or I trust the people who have represented to me that they're people they trust. I kind of work through networks of trust. But you're depending on those human beings, and human beings are imperfect. So, but that's one question we will ask with James. I'm convinced that James Turk is one of the most... is one of the financial people I've met in my lifetime who has the highest integrity. And so he has extraordinary integrity, both in terms of understanding gold, but also in the way he conducts himself in his newsletter business and writing books and in running Gold Money. So, based on my study of that, but in particular my assessment of James Turk, that's why I feel comfortable with such a system. But there are many things. Digital gold is novel and new, and so it has the advantage of being in England offshore, but it has the disadvantage of it's not under your control, and so you're depending on other people to be reliable.
Other good questions.
Okay, and there's one more question. How do I invest my 401k from jobs into precious metals? There are limited funds to choose from. Should I roll over to a Roth IRA? Which investment funds are good for precious metals investments? I would really encourage the person who asked that question to go down to the library and get, or buy if you can, The Coming Collapse of the Dollar by Turk, because he goes through all the different investment vehicles that you can use for a 401k or IRA. It's an excellent, excellent review and excellent list. Now, in my experience, the ones that you can use that are pure bullion are limited, but they do exist. So show.
Catherine, we have a few minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, and my question for you is, how do we sum up tonight? What are the things that people should come away with and also come into next week's seminar thinking about and studying about so they can really master the subject of precious metals?
Okay. What I would say is precious metals, understanding precious metals is an important part of our world. It's something that I advise is a good use of our time. One, because precious metals provide a form of real money that can be trusted even when central banks and governments can't be. Doesn't mean that the price isn't volatile, but in a world where the central banks and the governments could melt down, precious metals are real money, and they'll be recognized as real money ubiquitously around the world. So they are an important form of money, and in very dangerous financial situations, they are a store of value that we can count on like an insurance. So again, I think of precious metals as both real money and insurance. So for those reasons, Byron, it's useful to know them. Second of all, and as important, it is very important to see precious metals and what has been happening in the precious metals markets as part of the economic warfare we're dealing with, and to understand their strategic role. I can't say this enough to people who are interested in politics. You don't have to necessarily go march. Take that $100 and buy gold. It's a revolutionary act. It is a blow for freedom. And that's not an investment. That's a political act in saying, I'm not going to let the tapeworm control the wealth in this planet. So I think, Byron, it's important to understand precious metals not only in terms of what it can do for you as a financial insurance policy or as a medium of real money in the worst case, but what it can do for us, for those of us who are interested in transformation, as a way to literally ensure that we have a strategic position in the critical strategic assets on the planet and we don't concede them to the tapeworm. So if you want to understand economic warfare and you want to play to win at economic warfare, accumulating gold and silver is a very important and worthwhile way to do it, and one ultimately which can provide long-term financial security as long as you're not dependent on that asset for liquidity day-to-day because, again, the price is extremely volatile.
On that note, thank you, Catherine Austin Fitz. Let's wrap up tonight. Again, Catherine, what a wonderful, wonderful account of precious metals and an introduction. Thank you on behalf of everyone listening for what you've done tonight. Well, we're going to end, as we always do, by turning to the currency of love. And for that, as always, our spiritual advisor to Solari, Eliana Obadia, will lead us in a prayer in the last minute or two here. Eliana?
Good evening, everybody. I'm thinking, Byron, about the currency of love and how the currency of love is always the same as the currency of gratitude. And so as we end tonight with all what we've received, we give thanks. We just give so much thanks for the opportunity to receive this kind of information that's given from the place of wanting to uplift and transform everyone on this call, all of the people in our lives, and extending out and out into the whole earth so that we can live a life of abundance and safety and security and mutual support. And that's for all beings on earth, human and animal, and the very earth herself. We give thanks that we are moving toward a world where we can operate in communities of trust, that we can begin to take the steps in our own lives, divine wisdom, so that we can make decisions that are in alignment with the source of all goodness and of all love. So just take a moment in the silence of our own spirit to really call in the connection to that place that can take all of the information that we've received and put it into action in the way that's right for you, that's in alignment with truth, because then it will always be right for the whole earth.
Show. Thank you, and good night, everyone. Thank you, Eliana.
Good night.
Good night.